if you take somebody else's copyrighted work without permission and use it without their permission, it is infringement. And the only issue is where in the scale of damages it falls.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast. I'm your host, Erin Austin, lawyer, mama of kid and doggy, tennis player, once and future trail runner, YouTube addict, and dreamer. I provide legal tips and bits for turning your expertise into recurring revenue, turning your time-intensive hourly-based business to one that is scalable and hopefully one day saleable is the journey from hourly to exit. This podcast is for experts, consultants, coaches, and other professional services providers with sophisticated corporate clients. If you're investing in the growth of your business, you need advice and resources that address the issues that set you apart from other service-based businesses. Those templates for online businesses don't mean a thing when your client sends their 50-page master services agreement to you for signature. Stop playing small because you don't know how to protect your ideas. Hourly to Exit is here to show you how to navigate the maze of contracts and intellectual property issues so that you can safely and profitably share your ideas with clients and with collaborators. Before we dive in, please remember that this podcast provides general information only. The content of this podcast should not be taken as legal advice for any individual case or situation. The information presented is not intended to be a substitute for professional legal consultation. Each legal situation is unique, and the laws and regulations can vary widely by location, and they do change over time. For specific legal advice regarding your individual circumstances, please consult with a qualified attorney who can address your specific needs. Now, let's get started with today's topic. Today's exciting episode is something hot off the presses. If you can consider a U.S. Supreme Court decision about copyright infringement, hot, but we're going with it. So recently, as I'm recording this in May 2024, the U.S. Supreme Court settled a conflict among federal courts of appeal that whether or not a copyright owner can recover damages for infringements that occurred more than 3 years before commencement of the lawsuit. So the Second Circuit said that the copyright plaintiff would be limited to damages that are only 3 years look back from the filing of the complaint. So they can't look at damages for infringements that occurred before 3 years back from the filing of the complaint, whereas the Ninth and 11th Circuits disagreed and said it wasn't limited to that 3 year look back. And so in a 6-3 decision authored by Justin Kagan, the Supreme Court affirmed the 11th Circuit's ruling and held that the Copyright Act entitles a copyright owner to recover money damages flowing from a timely infringement claim, even if the infringement at issue occurred more than 3 years before the initiation of the suit. There are, of course, some nuances to that, but generally we want to look, it is a win because we don't want to have different results just because, you know, it is federal law, so it should apply equally all over the country. We don't want to have different results about what damages are available to us if you file in the Ninth Circuit or the 11th Circuit versus filing the Second Circuit. So that's great. So all that to say that let's take this moment to review damages for copyright infringement. And so we're going to have a little refresher here. It may even be the deepest dive into damages that I've done. I know I've done some light review of the damages for copyright infringement. So let's go a little bit deeper today. So first, you know, what damages are available under the U.S. copyright law? So it provides that the infringer of a copyright is liable for either the copyright owner's actual damages plus additional profits of the infringer, or they can get statutory damages. It's actual damages or statutory damage. You cannot do both. So let's talk about actual damages and profits first. So as the name suggests, actual damages refers to the compensation awarded to a copyright owner based on the actual harm that the owner suffers from the infringement.
so they can be calculated as the real financial loss. So maybe lost profits from sales that didn't occur because of the infringement. Also, they have access to the profits made by the infringer. One might be more, like maybe the infringer sold it for more than you could have sold it for, meaning you should have raised your prices. If your lost profits are higher, then go after that. If their profits are higher, then you go after that. And then so maybe it's a combination of the two. Maybe they create a derivative that created more profits. So you can get your lost sales and profits from the derivative. And so it's, you know, you can't double dip, but you can aggregate your losses and the profits of the infringer. So the complication here is on proving actual damages is that you do need to have to prove evidence of an actual loss. So you need to be keeping, you know, sales records, financial statements, anything that would show that decrease in revenue that is attributable to the infringement. So if your sales just happen to go down because nobody wants it anymore, and it's not attributable to the infringement, that would not be an actual damage due to the infringement. So you do need to have some records so you can make that connection, which makes it a little more complex than statutory damages, which we'll talk about in a minute. For when we're looking at the infringer's profits, that's a little easier to prove. All you have to do is show the infringer's gross revenue. That's considered their profits. They can say, well, I also have these expenses too, so this is my profit. But obviously, that's a little bit easier to prove. They have clearly been selling it and had some gross revenue based on the infringement. All right, so that's your actual profits and actual damages and infringer's profits that you can get as damages. Okay, the next category are statutory damages. And there are some eligibility requirements, which we'll talk about in a second. But if eligible, you can elect, the copyright owner can elect to recover, instead of actual damages and profits, an award of statutory damages. So these are the damages that the court can award for copyright infringement, which do not require the copyright owner to prove actual financial loss. And this is really helpful if it is hard to prove your losses. Maybe you can't prove that direct relationship between the infringement and a decrease in sales. Or maybe you haven't really had any sales yet, or there's not enough of profits to or damage to really make sense to pursue legal action. But if you have access to statutory damages, that can make a big difference. So what are the eligibility requirements for statutory damages? It requires timely registration of the work with the U.S. Copyright Office. So to qualify for statutory damages, you must have registered the copyright either before the infringement began or within 3 months of first publishing the work. So publishing means when you made it available to the public. So when it's still like hanging out in your computer, that's not publishing. That's creation, which is a different measure. For statutory damages, it's within 3 months of first publishing the work. So statutory damages can range from $750 to $30,000 per work, as determined by the court. We'll talk about what those variables are. And if there is a willful infringement, the statutories can be increased up to $150,000 per work. So obviously, talking about the cost of litigation and whether or not it's worth it to pursue an infringement claim, this can make a big difference, especially if you haven't really made any profits from your work yet, or the profits have been relatively low. If you have access to statutory damages, one, you don't have to prove your actual loss, and two, it makes it a much simpler case to prove, therefore keeping attorney's fees lower than if you have to prove all the other stuff. So will the court find that the infringement is willful? So it can, if it can show that the infringer knew what they were doing was wrong. This can be the case where you sent a cease and desist letter, and instead of stopping the infringement, they just changed their URL or did something to try to hide. And so they, okay, I'll shut down that website and open up another one. Obviously, that is a very willful infringement versus someone who, as soon as they get caught, they take it down. As you know, because I definitely preach this all the time, An infringement is an infringement. It doesn't matter if you didn't realize you couldn't use it, or, oh, I thought it was on the internet, so it was free, or, oh, innocent or not. That will depend where in the spectrum of damages falls, but not whether or not it is an infringement. If you take somebody else's copyrighted work without permission and use it without their permission, it is infringement. And the only issue is where in the scale of damages it falls. So let's talk about calculating the damages. You know, how much in that spectrum, it's a pretty big spectrum, where the damages fall. So it varies, and it will depend on the seriousness of the infringing act, and it also depend on the financial worth of the infringer. So the court is going to determine this. So innocent infringements, again, still infringement, but if the court finds and the infringer can prove that it really was innocent, I don't even know what this would be, honestly, they can reduce it to as little as $200 per work. So maybe an innocent infringement might be, I had a license, let's use this one, like the stock photo place, and you get a license for it. And your license is to use it on your website. So you have someone who does your email list or something. And they're like, oh, I like this image. And so, yeah, you have a license for all the images on your website, and they put it in your newsletter. And your license doesn't include use in the newsletter. Maybe that might be considered an innocent infringement. Again, I don't know how it becomes innocent. I mean, we should know. We should all know better that we can't use a works that we don't own without a license or permission. So let's just use that one as an example. So you thought you had a license for it. It was reasonable to believe that if you can put it on your website, you can put it in your newsletter, but you actually can't. So let's call that an innocent infringement. And on the other hand, if it was something that was willful, like our example, you got that cease and desist, but instead you tried to hide your use instead of stopping the use, and the court can find as much as $150,000 penalty damages per work. That really isn't a penalty, right? I mean, that is intended to punish the infringer in that circumstance. And so again, that spectrum will depend on the circumstances. Now, for an actual calculation, I'm going to use the example of a website that has used 3 copyrighted photos, all from the same photographer, maybe all from the same source. And so 3 photographs from the same source used on 1 website without permission. And so if my range of statutory damages is $750 to $30,000, let's just use $10,000 per photo. It's a lot, but let's just use it anyway. So what would the damages be? I've got 1 website from 1 source, 3 photographs. So damages are calculated per work, not per act of infringement. There was only 1 act of infringement. I took these photographs, I put them on my website, but it was 3 works, 3 separate copyrighted photographs. So the damages are per work. So at $10,000 per work, that would be a $30,000 statutory damages claim for that. So every song, every book, every photograph, that would be a separate work. Anything that's a separate work is registered under the Copyright Office is eligible for the separate statutory damage. I don't know, which would be a good thing. I will look into this. Like, let's say I take one, now I know the answer to this. So if I take 1 paragraph from a book, or I take 3 paragraphs from a book, that is still 1 work. That is not 3 works. All right, so as you can see, that's a pretty heavy club to wield as a copyright owner if you have access to statutory damages. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to get $10,000 for photo. Again, that's pretty high. Let's say, though, somebody uses that photograph in advertising, that they know you don't get to use photographs for free in advertising. That's going to be a bigger number than if you use it on your website that, frankly, you know, nobody visits. So it'll be in there. But that's the continuum of damages that are available for minor infringements, I'll call it, versus major or willful infringements. So obviously, when you have statutory damages, it's in everybody's interest to just settle out of court. I mean, nobody wants to, you're going to lose. I mean, if you infringed and it's eligible for statutory damages, why would you go to court? But you do want to have that leverage to keep it out of court. as I was writing this script, and it's hard to imagine I use a script because I always deviate from it, but I do start with a script. And I was thinking about the fact that this is what I hear a lot. Like, how do I get as much as possible onto one copyright registration? Because there are fees involved with registering copyrights. They're not very high, frankly, but there is some work involved and some resources involved to register something in the copyright office. And the idea is to get compilation or entire course or a series onto one copyright registration. But what I was thinking is, if your statutory damages are calculated per work, does it make sense, just as a kind of prophylactic against copyright infringement, to have each, like, let's say, module of a course registered as a separate work? You don't lose protection that way. You have more works. So if I have, let's say I have a 10 module course and it is sold together, like you cannot buy the courses individually. You can only buy them together. So it would qualify as a single work for registration purposes. You don't have to register each of, let's say there's 10 modules. You can register them together because they're only available as one work. So that would be one work. Somebody steals one or more portions of my course. It's one work that's been infringed. And so that would be your statutory damages for one work. Versus if I have registered each module separately, even though you can only buy them together, but I've registered them separately. And therefore, each module is now a separate work. That same infringement of my 10 module course is now an infringement of 10 separate works. So this is just to remind you, statutory damages can be very high. And even for innocent uses, as a copyright owner, hey, great, you have access to these statutory damages. However, on the other side of that, if you are the infringer, even if you are an innocent infringer or an accidental infringer or an ignorant infringer, because you don't know better, although you should if you're listening to this podcast, we want to make sure we're always getting permission to use anything that you don't own, anything that falls within copyright protection. If you don't own it, make sure you have permission to use it. I have created a number of resources to make sure that you understand what needs to be done to get permission. And so the information is available to you. So don't forget, IP is fuel. This week's episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast is sponsored by the NDA Navigator. Non-disclosure agreements, also known as NDAs, are the bedrock of protecting your ideas and your business's confidential information. Of course, I recommend that you have a lawyer review any agreement before you sign it. However, facing a constant stream of NDAs can be overwhelming, especially when time and budget constraints prevent you from seeking full legal review. That's where the NDA Navigator comes in. Designed specifically for entrepreneurs, consultants, and business owners with corporate clients, the NDA Navigator is your guide to understanding, negotiating, and implementing NDAs. Empower yourself with legal insights and practical tools when you don't have the time or funds for a full legal review. Get 20% off by using the coupon code H2E at protectyourexpertise.com. Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Hourly to Exit podcast. Don't forget to check out the show notes for the resources and organizations mentioned during the episode. If you find the podcast to be valuable, please subscribe so you get notified of new episodes every week. And I would be so grateful for a rating and review, and it helps get the word out. See you next week.